Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome back to Bulwark Movie Club. The Bulwark Movie Club, is that what we're going? Chris Herbert, I'm going to pull the curtain back here slightly. Chris Herbert was saying, maybe we don't want to brand it like that, but I don't know. People seem to like it. Bulwark Movie Club. Let us know in the comments. Leave a click, like, share with people, subscribe. But if you like that title, we'll have to stick with it because the people get to decide.
I
think it's a good one.
I love
Sarah.
Films.
Sarah Longwell, thank you for joining us today. Jonathan Last, thank you for joining us today. I'm Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very excited to be talking about one of the best movies of the 2000s, considered to be one of the most prescient films of the 2000s. One of the great harbingers of where we are, where we were going, where we wound up. Idiocracy, Mike Judge's Idiocracy.
We should thank our viewers, people who liked the Death of Stalin episode. We weren't sure how many, if we would keep doing it, but not only did we really like doing it, I think it was really fun. We got a lot of suggestions, and everyone was like, you got to do Idiocracy next. I've never seen Idiocracy.
I've
never seen Idiocracy.
Oh.
I got to tell you, I'll say this at the jump. As soon as I started watching it, I knew exactly why I never had, which is that I always felt like this was not a movie for me. This mm-hmm. felt like a movie for boys. I maintain that, actually, okay, a little okay. bit. But I don't know what I thought it was, because it's old now. I mean, that is a young Luke Wilson.
Came out in 2006. Yeah. It was released in 2006. I think it was shot in 2005. So.
Yeah. 20 years old.
And so certainly like 20, if 2006, a 26-year-old me did not think, boy, this is a movie for me. But I enjoyed it a ton, and I enjoyed it more because I could see it through a political lens, and it was great fun. I will say, I know a lot of people suggested this. I didn't think it was anywhere near as potent a political analysis for the moment as Death of Stalin. But it had lots of fun things for us to chew on.
Well, this is a thing we can discuss, and I'm excited to get into that, because this movie has had a very interesting life. It gets buried by Fox. It gets buried by Fox when it's released, like to the extent that there was a profile of Mike Judge in the New York Times, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. And one of the scenes in this profile is the author of the profile is having lunch with Mike Judge, and Tom Rothman kind of walks up at the Fox cafeteria, and he's like, my bad on that one. I buried it. You know, we should have believed in it. We should have had faith in it. We should have put it in theaters. But I think this is a movie that was kind of destined to always have that cult status, much like his first big feature live action film, which of course is Office Space. You've seen Office Space, right, Sarah?
Like 100 times. No, I'm a Mike Judge fan. And so it is weird that I haven't seen this, but I could also see why I didn't jump at it, despite the fact that I must have scrolled past it 1,000 times in my life.
Yeah, it's definitely it's a little bit caustic. It's a little bit some of the language in this. JVL, we were talking yesterday, and you were like, I'm watching it now. I'd kind of forgotten some of the language in this one.
Yeah, this is a movie that I used to really, really like. Now that it plays as a documentary, I do not care for it. Now that it is our actual life, mm-hmm. I feel I do not like it.
Do not
like this movie.
Do not want.
I mean, it hits really different. I would say all the President Camacho stuff hits different. All of the cable news stuff hits different. And frankly, the eugenics stuff hits different too.
So Idiocracy opens not with the character who is played by Luke Wilson in this movie. His name is Joe Byers. He gets called Not Sure in the future. He's an army, the most average member of the United States Army, who is put into suspended animation for an experiment for a year and winds up waking up 500 years in the future, a real Rip Van Winkle sort of thing. You get this occasionally in storytelling. But before we get to that, before we get to the adventure of Joe Byers, there's a 5 minute preview which shows how the world gets to where it is, right? Which involves essentially the stupid outbreeding the intelligent. To put it as bluntly as possible, the stupid people who do not have impulse control just breeding like rabbits, while our kind of stereotypical upper middle class to upper class white urban types keep putting off having children. They keep putting it off, keep putting it off, and eventually one of them dies. Ironically, while masturbating to produce sperm for artificial insemination. So there is this explicitly, like, this is not like an implied, like, oh, you know, it is explicitly about eugenics, which has, again, a weird. Watching that now, JVL, which side of the aisle did you think that would appeal more to?
Yeah. And sorry, before you answer, the guy who does the procreating, I don't think his name's Cletus, but it is like Clovis or something like that. Like, we have something super close.
Thank you for reminding me, because I do want to ask you if we want to put a Cletus limit on this episode, if JVL has to like keep it to just two Cletuses for this episode, maybe we can do three.
I don't know. A wheels off fun pod, and so JVL can do what he wants. It's not
okay, as many Cletuses as possible.
I just, when the guy who is breeding like rabbits with multiple women is like a Bubba for the ages, and I can't remember what his name was, but I just remember thinking, man, JVL is gonna have a field day with this. So you take it away, sir.
Yeah. Again, it all just hits very different for me. If I could put on my Barbara Streisand Prince of Tide pants, as Tobias would say, and talk about demography.
We're talking. Tell me more.
One of the things that, you know, I did write a book about demographics once upon a time, and the idiocracy thing is wrong. This isn't actually how it works. So, fertility rates do correlate with education and income, but they are led by the upper classes historically and have almost always and everywhere been that way. So the people who are at the lower end of the socioeconomic and educational ladders wind up patterning their fertility preferences over the long term on the elites. And so this is a thing that we have seen throughout all societies over the last 100 years or so, everywhere, whether you're talking about Iran, like theocratic post-revolutionary Iran, America, France, Japan. I mean, this is, and so everybody's fertility rates are moving backwards. It is not the case that the Cletuses of the world are breeding like rabbits. It's the opposite. And this idea about the Untermensch outbreeding everybody has a very rich history from, again, across the world, you know, whether it is Nazis worrying about Jews and gypsies, or it is Americans worrying about the Irish. Right. And in the Italians, or then later worrying about Hispanic immigrants. And the answer is, again, all of these fertility rates regress to the mean very, very fast. When I wrote my book on demographics, one of the things I got when talking to conservative audiences was like, oh, but, you know, America's being overrun by Hispanics and they are breeding like crazy. It's exactly the idiocracy thing. And I was like, I am sorry, but it turns out that Hispanic fertility has regressed to the mean over like the course of a single generation. in America. And this is, in fact, if you have followed anything about demographics over the last 10 years, and you see like every year there's a story about like, oh, the American total fertility rate is a new all-time low. The reason it has hit a new all-time low every single year is because of declines in Hispanic fertility. Not like, you know, whites and blacks have basically held even. It is that as you've had all of these recent, you know, arrivals in America and they plant their roots in America, and within one generation, their kids have the same fertility patterns as native-borns. Anyway.
Isn't part of that people being like, you know what's expensive these days? These kids. Like, it is too expensive to have.
So that is
how
part
many
of
car
it.
Seats can but fit again, in one back
this
seat?
This is true everywhere. It's true in Tehran. It's true in Moscow. It's true in Helsinki. It's true in Mexico City. It's true here. It is something bigger, and I don't want to turn this into demographics talk. I would just say that now that we live in a world where the eugenic stuff is running active policy, like I wrote today about a speech being given by a senator, a U.S. senator from Missouri, in which he talks about like great replacement theory. I found it very, very hard to laugh at the eugenics in Idiocracy the way I did the first time, when this stuff didn't like really exist in our world, respectably. That's all. I don't mean to be a buzzkill. Like, it's a funny movie. It's a great movie. But again, just like context matters.
Yeah.
And viewing it through this level, like I did literally have the experience of watching Senator Eric Schmidt's piece about like, you will not replace us on this, you know, within an hour of watching Idiocracy. And that whole first section like feels mean-spirited and dangerous in a way that the first time I saw it and the second and third and fourth and fifth time I saw this movie, I just thought was hysterical.
Well, this is a mean-spirited movie. This is another thing we were discussing before the show, that this movie is mean-spirited in a way that Office Space and a lot of Judge's other stuff is not. You know, we could talk about King of the Hill versus you know, Silicon Valley versus whatever. But there's a real mean streak to this movie about the idiocracy itself, like the people who are, you know, left and running the world in 2505 years in the future, which I'll be honest, is like cathartic and appealing in a very real way. As I'm sitting here, you talk about what you were watching last night. What I'm watching today is RFK Jr. talking about vaccines and that sort of thing. And I'm watching the people trying to cheer him on and be like, well, yeah, fuck those shots. You know, it's like slavery. It drives me absolutely bonkers. It drives me absolutely bonkers. And I'm okay with a little bit of mean-spiritedness toward that type of person.
Kids need electrolytes, not vaccines.
Can I? So since we're already gonna zag on this, I wanted to let us, I don't know, settle in first. But I would say one of my big critiques of this, when you say this movie was prescient, I guess I expected it to be more prescient than actually it was when I saw it. So many people say Idiocracy was a documentary. I'm not sure what I thought it was going to be about. But if I had to take away some of the, with the exception of this very specific political scenes with President Comanche, which that hits hard relative to Trump, like the idea that he was a rock star, porn star, whatever, that led him to be the elected president. It's like, okay, that's on the nose. But the thesis was actually more corporatized, that these big corporate giants were going to rule things to such an extent in the future that you know, we're watering our plants with a Gatorade substitute, like a downgrade Mountain Dew. And that's why, you know, in this world, which, by the way, looks very much to me like WALL-E, like the movie
the trash
WALL-E.
Mountains. Yeah, or yeah, Ready Player One.
Because I had never seen this movie before and had seen WALL-E many times, both as an adult and with my kids, I don't it was funny how much Wally sort of mimics it, the mountains of trash and they don't know what to do with anything. But the, so much of it didn't seem to me to get what the future would be like correctly.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So this is a thing I always think about when I'm watching a sci-fi futuristic type show, right? Which is that anytime you make something about the future, it is almost always the present, but more so. It is always is so. Like in 2005, there was lots of talk about landfills. What are we going to do with all this trash? What are we going to do with all this trash that we have? And it turns out there's a lot of space for trash. It's not really a thing that we have to worry about that much. It's why, like, if you go back and watch Blade Runner, right? Blade Runner has this kind of undercurrent of like yellow peril, right? There was like this fear of Japan and China coming to America and like taking everything over. And that is very present in 1982's Blade Runner. That is like a thing that defines that future and is obviously not really a thing that we are super worried about anymore. It just doesn't. That's not a thing we have to think about. And so when I'm watching Idiocracy, I'm thinking of the things that it does get right. Like, for instance, the celebritization of politics, the President Camacho. Like, the President Camacho thing is so perfect. And so, and the degradation of the House of Representatives to the House of Representatives. The cabinet secretaries, the attorney, what do they call her? Attorney General Funbags? Like, all of the this stuff. Like that.
Well, I can't wait to talk about how they deal with women in this movie.
What are your thoughts on Rita? Because I love this character. She is Maya Rudolph is so funny in this movie.
Is this like pre-SNL for her?
I think it's right. It's like her first season, maybe.
All right. I'll tell you what I think, because this was actually one of my biggest disappointments about the movie, because Maya Rudolph is a queen. She should be given only the awesomest of roles. And I thought that now to get to the way they talk about women, and we haven't really talked about this yet, and I want to lead up to it properly. So much of the premise on this is that mankind has been reduced to its most base forms. Like, people cannot talk in complete sentences anymore. They are so stupid and so degraded over time that we are 500 years in the future. It's like, people sit there, much like in WALL-E when they're on the ships, like they now have to live in space on these ships with these enormous big gulps, and they all fly around in these recliners. Like Dax Shepard, a very young, dumb-looking Dax Shepard, is sitting on a lazy boy that once he gets up, you realize is also a toilet, and he's just eating like a bucket of slop, where he's like drinking the Mountain Dew through a straw, and his like food consumption is just. It's like a popcorn bucket of sugar, like paste.
Lard.
Yeah, right?
Sugar lard.
And so one thing that happens if you degrade men down to three, he's watching a show that's just like, you know, they kind of have almost
Ow,
like
my
a,
balls.
but it's first, it's like this selection. You can see the selection screen and it's like grotesque violence, porn. And then like the show he's watching is Ow, My Balls, which is just a guy like getting kicked in the balls, falling onto things and hurting his balls and like whatever. And he's laughing maniacally at it. And you could see how at a time when like Jackass was
right,
one of the
right.
dominant things that people were watching, like why this joke really landed. But of course, what happens when men are reduced to this is also that women become nothing but sexual items. And so she is a prostitute, but she's a prostitute also in our timeline, right? The 2006 Maya Rudolph character is a prostitute and this bit is like kind of funny where the military has found her because they went to her pimp upgrade, which is, this is one of the best bits in the whole thing, which is upgrade is spelled UPGRAYEDD. the second D's for, what was it? I can't remember what the joke is, but upgrade. And so she's a prostitute, and she is treated then as such in the future as well. Like, women are like the one woman who is on the, there's not that many women characters to begin with, but the one that there is Maya Rudolph. And the best thing you can say, I think, about her character is that she allows the male character to define himself as a nicer person relative to everybody else you see. Like, there is a scene where he has to tell, in order to get some time alone with her to talk to her about something, he has to tell the guys around him that they are going to go. And I think they don't say words. They just make the little circle and then put the finger, index finger through it. For those listening, I have just showed you what that looks like. And some of the men say, they come down during the talk and they're like, can this be done family style? Like, they just, there's just a casual, like, can we have a gang rape here? I basically hate that stuff. Like, it just doesn't, it's not going to land for me. And I also think it's just like a criminal underuse of Maya Rudolph, where her entire character is there to be like, this guy is like a guy from the past who's still a nice guy and has certain morals around women, even though, like, the best they could do for a woman in this was fun bags, cabinet member, and prostitute. Those are the two female characters in this show, in this movie.
I will say, so she had been on SNL for like 5 years when they shot this movie. She'd been on the show for a while. I will say, she has my absolute favorite line read in this movie, where it's towards the end of the film, where Dax Shepard like picks her up to move her closer to the TV screen or something. And she's just like, no, you fucking moron. Like that, like it's like the perfect encapsulation of how frustrating all of this must be to a person of completely average intelligence. And so that is what the movie is really about for me, which is,
yes, this is how I feel listening to Sarah's podcast, Sonny.
this is how I feel. This is the idea of being a like normal person and watching the world shift around you to the worst and not understanding precisely why it has happened is what the movie is about. So I just want to read an excerpt from this New York Times profile of Mike Judge by Willie Staley. Then he told me, he being Mike Judge, told me the best story of the night. He was location scouting for Idiocracy at a reform school, though he didn't know it was a reform school at the time. He looked around and thought the students there looked, in his words, kind of stupid, and figured they might be of use to him. In the Idiocracy universe, the most popular movie in America and the winner of 8 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, consists entirely of a man's buttocks passing gas intermittently for 90 minutes. Judge had made a 35mm print of this movie within a movie, just a few minutes of it, for a scene that takes place in a theater, and he wound up recruiting 250 of the juvenile delinquents to fill the seats. Judge figured he'd have to do a bit of directing to get the proper response from these extras. That context-free flatulence wouldn't actually be that funny, but the kids surprised him. They just start laughing, he told me, and they just keep laughing. And that is like, I feel like the entire world is now a collection of reform school students who are just kind of laughing at what is happening in the world, or just kind of going along with it, or actively supporting it. And it breaks my brain. It breaks my brain. And I don't know how to handle it. And this movie kind of makes me feel seen in a way.
JVL, does it make you feel seen?
I mean, no, I was joking when I said that this is how I feel listening to the focus group sometimes, but I kind of wasn't joking. Sometimes I will listen to the people in your focus groups say things that are just utterly divorced from reality. Like, he's just a businessman. He made so much money with his casinos that I trust that he knows it. Like, things which are just like, no, he didn't. He bankrupted his casinos, right? Like, this is just things that are utterly stupid. They might as well be the prosecutor saying, look at the evidence. They might as well be Dax Shepard's character. That's like a prevailing ethos in America now. Like, it just really is. People just like say stuff. And I don't know how it's all supposed to work. I don't know. Like, I, like, again, the Bobby Kennedy hearings today, you know, the Joseph LaDopo or whatever the idiot Surgeon General of Florida is, you know, they just say things that are nonsense. And people just, you know, I don't know, man. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean for this to be like a heavy episode.
You got depressed watching.
I did. I really did. Yeah.
Okay. Not even you weren't. You didn't even find the PowerPoint presentation about the pimp's love versus a square's love funny. That didn't work for you at all.
I laughed out loud at that part.
I laughed at parts of it.
He's got 20 slides he's going through.
Jesus, Collins.
It's one of the best bits in the movie.
I don't know. It's it was a tough watch. Do you guys not feel any of that? Am I the only one?
No, in part, I didn't. Largely because, again, I sort of felt like, and maybe this is a stupid way for me to analyze something like this, but having not watched it back then and only watching it now, I was like, well, they really misread like the cultural dominance of our, like, like they that Fuddruckers and Carl's Jr. and the soft drinks and all of that stuff, they, like the brands are like basically the thing that rules the world. Like the one political catastrophe that happens is when Luke Wilson's character says, well, the reason the plants aren't growing is because you're not using water. You're using this like downgrade Mountain Dew and they're all like the stuff in the toilet. like that's what we should put on flour, like on the plants. And that causes a bunch of people, like they switch and like the plants start growing, but it also causes all the Mountain Dew, the fake Mountain Dew people to lose their jobs and for Brando. Their stock to Brando. Crash. And yeah, is that what it's called? Brando.
It's got
what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes. what are electrolytes? It's what's in Brando. you know, I guess I was like, you know, he was making a critique on the undue influence of corporate culture, where I actually think that the way that people get, this isn't Judge's fault. Like there's lots about this that's interesting. It's just to me, like the way that people are getting dumber is much more a function, not of sort of mindless consumerism exactly, but more the information streams becoming so diffuse and AI and not reading, like they're, you know, like, and I gotta say, some of the critiques lacked a little fleshing out. Like the idea that this guy was a lawyer and that there was still a legal system, there was still a stock market, but everybody was too stupid to like do anything. But these things still existed. Also 500 years in the future. I don't know. It was weird for them to, cause he comes back. Right. And everybody keeps accusing Luke Wilson's character of talking faggy, of it being faggy talk because he speaks in complete sentences even. And so everybody thinks he sounds like a fag. That's fag talk. And I was like, first of all, conservatives, just so you know, people don't get woker. More woke as the future goes on. They get, apparently it's still cool to call things faggy. But I don't know. It felt, I spent the whole time being like, well, this wouldn't be what it's like. Or like, this isn't. I don't know. How does faggy survive 500 years?
You don't think there's like an element of like, oh, that's that. What is this highfalutin talk? It's not phrased exactly like that anymore. But you don't think that there's some pushback on that sort of stuff?
No, I do. It's just that you don't meet one. He is like an alien. He's an alien to them. Not.
Have you watched TikTok ever?
Yeah, but Sarah? but not a group of people. Not a group of people they dislike, like he's an unrecognizable form to them.
Gore Vidal and Bill Buckley would be unrecognizable forms to the people on TikTok these days. I think. Many of the Utes.
The Utes. Yeah.
one thing that is interesting about the like TV setup he has there is that he is not watching. He's not watching The Sopranos, or, you know, he's not watching. He is watching functionally what are TikTok shorts. He's watching Instagram reels. That's what Ow My Balls is. It's not a TV show. It's just a series of things stitched together. And one imagines that that's what the entire information ecosystem is, right? So I actually had that as a thing that the movie kind of gets right. Like the viewing habits of modernity. Granted, they could have had, like, you know, who could have seen a Joe Rogan style, like, nonsense person. Instead, they have the kind of Fox News style hosts in the American Gladiator outfits, which, like, again, that's like it's 2005, but more so. That's the idea there. And I can see.
It's,
I don't
not
know.
Really,
I just
wrong,
like,
is it?
Is that not wrong? That's not wrong. I feel like it's, I guess we have another 470 years, but yeah, maybe it's headed. I don't know. I just think, I like, set aside the big picture stuff, I do find this movie very funny on a moment to moment basis. Like the bit where Luke Wilson's character is trying to explain, like, you can't put electrolytes on the plants because it's killing them. They need water. And he's explaining it, and he's trying to look up what electrolytes are. There are no books. And so as we hear in the voiceover narration, eventually Joe just told them he could talk to plants. and then they believe him. And like that it's just like, there are so many little bits like that throughout the movie that I couldn't stop. I still find this movie very funny and entertaining. It cracks me up every time. And there are so many great little visual jokes throughout, like on the scoreboard at, like, the murder dome that he gets sentenced to, right? The advertisements around the Tyranno Vision screen are for TJO hand jobs, Viralade, Smart Speak, We Speak For You, only $12 per unit. That's just ChatGPT. That's just, like, Smart Speak, We Speak For You. That's just AI. That's LLM. Right. That's,
yeah, a lot of gambling stuff in there. Reminds
one for Mike Judge on that one.
All the ads. Can we talk about Mike Judge himself? Does that have any interest to you guys?
Sure. I like Mike Judge.
Because I view Office Space as a perfect movie, of which there really aren't many, right? I mean, there are many, many great five-star movies that aren't perfect. Perfect meaning that there's literally nothing that you could change in it. Like, there's not a frame in it that's wrong. Like, everything in it is exactly right. I think Office Space
more is Jennifer Aniston.
Sure. More Jennifer Aniston would have been great. But it's like, I don't know. Like, I just think it is exactly right in every way. And there's a huge lag between that and Idiocracy, which I assume it's like 7 years, I think, between Office Space and Idiocracy. I assume part of this is that he was in movie jail for a little bit because Office Space didn't do well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's making King of the Hill.
Is he already?
Yeah.
He's starting King of the Hill that early. But he, like, the tone takes a turn because Office Space is a very loving movie. Like, he has great affection for everybody in that movie except for Bill Lumberg. He even likes the Bobs, right? You know, even the Bobs he kind of likes. And
well, the Bobs have the best line in the whole thing,
which is,
"What would you say you'd do here?"
It's also great.
I mean, I quote that every day to, you know, people out.
Richard Rule. Richard Rule is so good. But so we go from this very good natured movie, Office Space, to Idiocracy, to then Extract, which is also a really dark and mean movie, and then to Silicon Valley, which I think is kind of optimistic. It's a little dyspeptic because it doesn't like the tech bros in Silicon Valley, but it likes the rest of us. Like, Silicon Valley proposes that the problem are all of these assholes out in San Francisco, and that, like, the rest of us are actually all normal and okay. It just seems like maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it seems like Mike Judge has been on a journey It's like how he relates to people in the world. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I do think that. So for the record, King of the Hill was on from 97 to 2008. So like it was basically this whole time almost up to Silicon Valley. It comes out in 2010, I think, something like that. I will say Extract is another movie that is very dyspeptic, is very kind of down on the people in that movie. Everybody's kind of bad. Like nobody's great. I was talking with you about this before, JBL, Beavis and Butthead. I know, Sarah, were you a Beavis and Butthead watcher at all? Was that totally uninteresting to you?
So it's super uninteresting, except it was so culturally relevant when I was a teenager that like I caught enough of it to know.
But you loved Daria, right?
I loved Daria.
You loved the Beavis and Butthead spinoff, Daria. That was, yeah, you know, that's where she came from.
I had sort of forgotten that.
Yeah, yeah. But Beavis and Butthead is interesting too, because there is a weird mix of that is a show that is absolutely making fun of the characters on the show, but it's also kind of making fun of the viewers. The viewers are the Beavis and Butthead stand-ins. Beavis and Butthead spend all their time sitting on the couch watching the music videos that are playing before and after Beavis and Butthead play, right? Like you mm-hmm. are Beavis and Butthead to a certain extent. And Beavis and Butthead also had like lots of great jokes about like their redneck neighbors and their like dorky guidance counselors and that sort of thing. And so he has always kind of straddled this misanthropic line of like, I don't love a lot of what I see in the world. But I do think he, look, I think he, Even in Idiocracy, even in a movie that is kind of mean-spirited like it is, I do think he has some affection for the world, at least enough affection for the world to give it a kind of happy ending with Luke Wilson and Maya Rudolph, you know, having their super genius babies of like total average intelligence in the future. Even with the little, you know, note of the Dax Shepard lawyer idiot having 17,000 kids, too, you know, I don't know.
Sarah?
Yeah, I guess I thought the movie ended like it began, in that it was like, yeah, there's some people who should be reproducing and they're not reproducing nearly enough to offset how all these other morons are reproducing. Because it's like Dax Shepard has like a harem. These are the other women in the movie, or Dax Shepard's harem and all of their offspring. Whereas he and Maya Rudolph have three nice little, you know, biracial children. You guys didn't even respond to my women thing, but sometimes it's not just how women are treated in a movie, but also the lack, total absence of interesting characters among them. And so did you have any response to what I was saying? Do you think I'm right, wrong?
The women stuff is blatant enough that even I, and I am not sensitive to this sort of thing. Even I was a little like, huh? Like the extent to which women are shoved into the background and not given really much, just like much business. Like they, I mean, it is, I guess, like patriarchy, right? Like the in an Idiocracy future, it would by necessity wind up being super patriarchal. But
are you
everybody
sure?
Being, I you know, all women being reduced to prostitutes again, and just like not given a bunch of business during the movie, it felt a little off to me.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cashback and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cashback sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
Sarah, do you have a matriarchal future?
Well, I have a thought about the way, I have a thought about why women's role was what it was, but I'm interested, Sonny, in what you thought before I talk.
Yeah, Sonny, now, tell us why it wasn't a problem.
It didn't bother me that much because Maya Rudolph is so funny in the, like, Maya Rudolph is very funny in the film. And, like, we could talk, oh, by the way, did you guys stick around? Do you know there's a stinger, right? There's like a post-credit stinger.
I did not know that.
I didn't
to the
see
movie.
It.
You didn't. Oh,
I've seen this movie like 10 times. I've never stuck around through the credits.
Post-credit stinger is there's a third pod. There's a third pod that opens in the year 2505. And out of it steps Upgrade. Which just puts a nice little button on the joke she has throughout the movie that Upgrade is going to be coming for her. And Joe was like, no, he can't. Anyway, it's funny. You should go back and watch and just skip all the way to the beginning. No, it didn't bother me that much because Maya Rudolph is very, very funny in the movie. Like she just delivers an incredibly amusing performance. Like I love all of the work that she is doing in this film. I love the ridiculous costumes they have her in with like the branding for the various companies. Like she's wearing like billboard clothing. Is the only way I can think to describe it. I don't know. It does not bother me in the same way that it bothers you, Sarah.
Okay. Well, here's my big take that I saved for 40 minutes in about why Mike Judge couldn't make this movie with many women, and he had to pick, because even as a prostitute, like one of the funnier bits they do with her is that there's a guy who immediately sees her in 2505. Identifies her as a prostitute and starts trying to pay her for sex. But because they're so dumb at this point that Luke Wilson and Maya Rudolph's characters are so much smarter than them, she's able to kind of say, yeah, give me money now and I'll do this later. And he keeps falling for it. And so he keeps just bringing her more and more money. So she's able to buy things because this guy just like can't, he like can't put it together that he's getting scammed. But the entire movie, every character, the president, the cabinet, all the henchmen, all of it is men. And it's not, I don't know if it's Michael Judge's sex. I don't know that I think it's sexism. I think that it's because you couldn't make this movie with a lot of women.
You couldn't portray them being that stupid all the time?
Yes.
Is like, it because... I want to clarify. You couldn't portray them as being stupid all the time because women aren't that stupid, or because he would get in trouble for portraying them as that stupid?
I mean the former, not the latter. Imagine him trying to do with women, like to the extent that the women are there at all, it is only as a way to demonstrate how either dumb all of the men are in it or Luke Wilson's relative virtue. To this. If you had women as like a real part of this, you would struggle, I think, to, like for men, it was very easy to be like, the Starbucks is now where you go to get, because I can't remember what the tiers were of pricing, but it was a sex shop. Starbucks is a sex shop. They were all sex shops. Like the only thing the men did was like eat shit and try to have sex, right? It's like you boiled men down to their ids, which I think is actually just harder to do with women, whether it's because they still have to give life and no, sir, but I just like, I bet he couldn't see a way to do it in a way that made sense and would be funny.
Men are simple creatures is what you're saying.
I think that his interpretation of like who becomes an idiot, and I'll just say the one thing that I kept thinking as I was like, okay, well, let's think about the parallels to modern politics is the extent to which Donald Trump wildly overperforms with men now. And the gap now between women and men in terms of education, in terms of voting behavior, and as the Republican Party becomes more a reflection of Donald Trump's id and somebody who sleeps with porn stars and, you know, talks about, you know, is like a former sports owner or whatever. He's more attractive to men and these male podcasters who have 3-hour shows where they're like, I'm stoned and I'm trying to figure out if like this gorilla is going to like beat this shark in this fight, you know, like, and like dudes are into that in a way that I just don't think women are. And so I'm going to say that I actually think Mike Judge didn't know how to make Idiocracy and have it be about women.
I think that's probably about right. No, I think that's actually a really kind of profound insight, because I don't know how you would. Because who is like the only real like female Idiocracy character in the Idiocracy itself, right? It's the Attorney General character, like that. That's it.
Funbags.
Attorney General Funbags. And she is basically just repeating what the other guys like. There's no, she just says the same things as everybody else. How would you, Sarah, portray the women in a future like this? What would they be into?
Well, I don't think they'd have, if you take this movie to its logical conclusion, women probably are like captives or slaves of some kind in a world like this. Like, I'm not sure they could exist freely in a, because like it was interesting to me that so much of the sex was commoditized. But like, you know what I watched recently, because is it Cloverfield? No. What is the one where it's the dystopian future that they shot on like an iPhone? They just had its third season of it. It's a horror film. It's got Cillian. What's his name?
Oh, 28 days later.
28 days later, that then they do 28 months later, 28 years later. Okay, so I've only seen the first one because I was like, maybe I'll catch the third one. But I was like, well, I got to start the beginning, and I watched the first one. And the scariest part of that movie is that when everything's been wiped out and they find the military people, and the head of the military guy, this is like towards the end, is basically has found these women that are traveling with Cillian Michaels. Or whatever his last name is. Cillian Murphy, sorry. They're basically like, well, we're going to kill him and we're going to, like, we need to breed with these women. He's like, I promised these soldiers women. And I feel like in a dystopian world like this, where civilization is gone and men's ids are the only thing anybody has, like, women either get out of there, like they use their wits to get out of there and rule over the men, or men use physical domination of some kind and like moral barriers are gone. But I actually thought he just like really skipped over the male female dynamic in it, and did it by simply not just deciding not to play. Because I think if you introduce that, it builds up way more complicated questions of, if the men are all this dumb, the women are now like a superior ruling class, but then the world's like kind of okay, or the men have created like a thing where women are only there for sex, because these were like, the whole point is that the men can't think or do anything productive at all, or be anything other than like the base animals that they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they did all leave. I mean, we really don't see that many. Maybe they did all leave. Maybe they're up in Canada.
Maybe
we ought to end the show there, because it's such a profound observation, Sarah. That's really, you came to play. That's top notch.
Yeah.
I'm not going to top that.
Maybe you guys should consider the interior lives of women every once in a while. It might add another layer of dimension to how you look at you both being like, God, I couldn't possibly do that. Nah.
I'll think about it. Consider.
I live with more women than you do.
That's true. It's true.
All right. Well, this was a surprisingly downer episode. Frankly, we were having more fun with the murderous Stalinist purges than we were with Brando and Upgrade.
We got to get people to pick a better movie for us next week.
Well, can I just quickly say, as a Death of Stalin comparison, I think part of the reason that Death of Stalin was so much better is like the touch is so deft in that one. I mean, it is just like a scalpel in a way that this one's a hammer. And so like, this is funny. I thought this movie was really funny. I was like pumped that I finally saw it. I think that there are ways in which I was like, well, this guy in 2005, he had some stuff to get off his chest about people. And, you know, that part was pretty fun. But I didn't think that it said as much at the end of the day as Death of Stalin did, that was as resonant. For as many times as I've seen people say Idiocracy is a documentary about this political moment, and me always kind of knowing what that meant, but not caring enough to go really dig it in, the movie was sort of different. It wasn't as trenchant for the moment in a like I said, in a scalpel kind of way, but it isn't like a hammer kind of way.
Yeah. We'll always have President Dwayne Elizondo, Mountain Dew, Herbert Camacho. there is that. So
it's true. I don't know.
All right. Well, make sure you hit like and subscribe and recommend. As JBL says, maybe I don't know. I'm not sure what JBL wants now. Now I'm nervous and confused. I don't know.
Well,
where to
just blame the audience for picking a bad movie.
Okay.
So
you're nervous.
What do you want from us?
Welcome
next
to
time?
Podcasting with JBL.
Margin Call, Network.
Ooh, oh,
Prime
Call.
Of Miss G. Prime of Miss Jean Brody.
No one's
which I hear is a
one.
Great movie.
It is a great movie.
I've never seen it myself.
Are there any women in Margin Call? I can't remember.
There are Demi Moore's in Margin Call.
That's right. That's right. Demi Moore. Okay. No, I just always see. God, I haven't seen that movie since it came out. That would be a good one to revisit. I'll sign off here. Again, yeah. Let us know what we should do next. Preferably something that won't send JBL into a depression spiral. That'd be great. And we'll be back next week with another episode, hopefully.